G'day everyone, welcome to Get Lost with the Travel Guide for episode 30. We've got Carly rejoining us again, who's a Middle East travel tour guide who just finished a tour through Afghanistan and guided with the Taliban. Yes, that is correct. You've heard it. Listen up to this one. I've been dying to do this podcast once again with one of my favorite tour guides on the planet, who's the most passionate, enthusiastic, well-spoken, well-traveled traveler that I know in my whole network of people. If you want to get some real adventure, if you want to get some real travel experience, travel with Carly. She's epic. We're on. Finally, Carly, we meet again for the third bloody podcast. You've done Iraq, you've done Syria, and today we're going to be having a bit of a chinwag about bloody Afghanistan. You went there, and what in holy shit is that behind you? You look like you've just passed a bunch of degrees from Harvard or maybe Oxford.
Because I could lie and pretend that they are mine, but no, I'm actually living as part of a large estate, just staying in someone's house, paying rent while the property gets sold. So, and her husband was a BAFTA award winner, as you can see. So this is my story of life.
You could have made up the biggest story then. I would have bought it hook, line, and sinker.
I know. I could have said these are my BAFTA awards for some, I don't know, not dance, definitely not dance.
Wow. So we've been stinging to do this podcast now for about a week or two. You've just recovered or are recovering from COVID?
Yeah, sorry if I keep coughing. I think so, maybe. I don't know. I had something. I didn't check. I felt ill anyway.
So the chinwag I've been stinging talk about is you've just come back from, yes, people, Afghanistan. Now, I think you sent me a message on WhatsApp saying, oh, Ben, just hit my timer. Ben, I've been hanging out with the Taliban. Do I condone this? Do I not condone this? You were kind of at war with the Taliban. There was, they took over Kabul only 2 years ago. And to my knowledge, Afghanistan is under Taliban control. What we call terrorists. Now you're hanging out with terrorists. Are you a terrorist?
No, certainly not. I mean, although my passport might look like I am, but no, I'm not.
Much
as your reaction is, it's the same. Most people ask the same.
Do tell, how did you get there? Why did you get there? What's going on?
Going on, I've always wanted to visit Afghanistan ever since I lived in Syria many, many years ago, 2010. I work for a company whose passion and whose project has always been to work in Afghanistan. Can never afford to go pay for myself because it's the visa process is quite intricate. The cost of flights to get there. And it can be quite expensive to stay there just because not a lot of people are going there. So for many reasons, I didn't manage to go quite when I wanted to. So many years later, I had the opportunity to guide a tour. Yes, there are people who also want to visit Afghanistan, much like me.
Who's going? So
many people. I mean, these are my good friends who I traveled with to Iraq. So we'd already been to this section of the Middle East, hanging out in Baghdad. And then they wanted to join and we all wanted to go to Afghanistan. So I became their trip leader, freelancing for this company who I've freelanced for many years. And yeah, November, no, where are we now? Yes, beginning of November, I took this group 14 days to Afghanistan.
So only about four weeks ago, not three, yeah. Four. Geez,
like, 3 weeks even ago, know. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. It's very bloody fresh. Okay, so how long were you there for?
About 2 weeks. For 2 weeks.
Okay. If I go down a travel agent, said, book me a trip to Kabul, I think it's the capital of Afghanistan. Is that what you did?
Well, through the company, they sort out all of the logistics. But we have to fly initially. We have to then fly into Peshawar in Pakistan. We have to spend a night there in all of its hecticness. We have to get our Afghanistan visa there. Us ladies have to wear the full burqa and sit waiting for hours. We then get our visa, spend a night in Peshawar. Next day, we fly from Islamabad into Kabul with our visas. So there's no way we can get a visa back in this country. This is the way we have to do it. This is the process to get into the country.
You know why? Do you understand? I might have some tough questions for you. I know you're not a politician, but we're just trying to understand it. I mean, terrorists arguably took over the country. don't really know their political situation, to be fair, but like that, how is that how you, why do we know why we can't get a visa from Australia or from the UK?
It's basically, I mean, as you know, like terrorists have taken over. I mean, the country itself, no one really knows what is happening. It's in a moment to moment situation. The Taliban itself are trying to basically get into these positions. A lot of them can't read and write. They're trying to get into these positions, the Ministry of Tourism, Ministry of Affairs, whatnot. They're trying to, you know, and people working in the embassies are the same. They're trying to learn from the previous employers what to do, because they are taking over essentially, but they are learning. The people who are being, you know, who are having to lose their positions, they're losing their jobs. They're learning, you know, the situation is very organic, essentially. But in a situation with the embassies, you know, it was the same when I was in Syria. There are no representatives in the country. So there are no, there are, there's no, they're not basically the British, the, you know, the government in Britain would not allow, you know, they don't want to be sending people to Afghanistan, much like in Australia. So there is no representative to say, yeah, here's your visa, go and enjoy this country. So we have to get it via other means. You can also get it in Dubai, I think. But yeah, it's only possible to get it from probably outside our countries that aren't recognizing travel.
So when you turn up to a country, you need a type of a visa to work there or to holidays. Do you tick the box? Hey, I'm here to have a vacation.
Tourism. Is that
how you do it?
Yeah, and they still, people will ask people, you know, as we when we get into Kabul, they say, "What are you doing here?" With this, even when we pass the Taliban on checkpoints, they're just like, "What? Why?" And they just sort of, it's kind of a disbelief, like, "Okay, just go and look at this stupa or this monument, enjoy."
Did any locals or the Taliban actually try to ask, or do they speak English well, and do they actually follow through this question?
They don't. Depends. Some of them more so, you know, sometimes we'll pass through certain counties, essentially, or certain states, and then we'll meet the head Taliban in that area, and he will, he might perhaps say a couple of words. Those that we don't see that are, you know, a lot higher up are a lot more well-educated, but those that we meet along the way at the checkpoints, not so. Some might be able to speak a little bit, but predominantly they can't read and they can't write.
So they're just essentially troops.
Yeah, essentially. Like these are, the Taliban are, well, you know, when...
Sorry, someone's calling me. I'm just going to hang up on that person. Here we go. Where'd you go?
Lifestyle.
Oh, where are you? Hang on. We're still recording.
Yeah.
This is how high-tech this podcast is.
Can you see me and hear me? It says recording.
Yeah, I think so. Oh, man. Hang on.
I'm still here.
Yeah, I just got a message. Hang on, how do I do this? Sorry, people. This is what happens
now.
All the time. We got back. We're there again.
Hi.
Thank you for your patience. I am not a tech wizard at all. Just a kind reminder to the people listening, this podcast, $0, zero budget, keeping it raw as absolute possible. Speaking of my rawness, is my bloody memory. Remember where we were last off to? We'll be able to try to pick up where we left off.
Yeah, we were talking about Taliban. But we were talking about how, you know, I think you'd said that they're essentially army troops. They're essentially soldiers.
Yeah, they are.
When the Soviets invaded, the Mujahideen, the Afghan soldiers, you know, these Taliban that we see along the checkpoints now, these young guys, their fathers were fighting. Their fathers are soldiers. A lot of these people were soldiers. A lot of these guys have been, you know, brought up in environments where they're trained to fight. This is it. You know, they are fighting for their country. They're standing on these checkpoints. They don't know how to read and write. They are, you know, supporting this version of Islam and trying to keep everyone in order doing that, essentially.
I think there was a point where Australia, Britain, United States were all allies with Afghanistan or allies with the Taliban because they were fighting the Soviet Union.
Yep.
Rambo, he went in and fought with the Taliban in Rambo 3. I think it was.
Did he?
Yeah. Sylvester Stallone. That's when they were the good guys fighting those bloody Russians. And then the tables have turned. Yeah.
Well, that makes
perfect sense. So they're just used to, like, if they're war-torn country, it's I guess it's what you're used to is fighting.
Well, yeah, and this is kind of what's sad. This is why I find these countries fascinating, which is why I've always wanted to visit Afghanistan. It's not, I don't go to these countries for any like war tourism, but essentially what has happened in countries that have been taught by war is a story. And that's what I've always, when I go to Afghanistan, I want to visit the people. I want to know what happens here and to truly feel that. And a lot of these young men were their mothers died, their fathers died in war, in the invasions. Afghanistan has a really turbulent, horrific past. All these people that I would travel with, my guides, the drivers, the people we meet along the way, people are old. They've had such hard lives, that the poverty, the famine, and a lot of these lads don't have any homes essentially, and they are then taken to the borders between Afghanistan and Pakistan, or they have refugee camps because people would flee from Afghanistan. So they grow up in these environment, in these refugee camps, predominantly men are separated from women. They then have these madrasas, these schools of strict Islamic thought. So they're brought up with, maybe no parent or lost parents or grief stricken. They then learn this, this is how life should be. Women are seen as, they're not even exposed to women necessarily. And if they are, women are, I wouldn't go so far as to say the devil, but there's certainly temptresses, or they're, they should be covered up. They have their place. And then that's all they have in their lives. And then it's like, right now, now you're older, what, essentially, what else do they have? Their lives are very narrow, it's very sort of blinkered for them. That's their devotion. It's Islam, it's keeping Afghanistan as our country. And that's all they know.
You've got any sort of child is going to experience trauma, you would think, a majority under those circumstances. You're losing your parent, your parents are being murdered or killed in combat, and you got this biological connection with your parents. So if they've been murdered, well, who killed them? It was the enemy. So you're going to possibly have this trauma or even maybe even hatred to evolve or join a terrorist organization.
And essentially, I mean, the Taliban itself, as I said, I'm not a politician, and sometimes, the ins and outs of it, I think they can get quite complex. But ultimately, the Taliban wanted to be recognized as a government. They want, this is, they want to be respected. So when we travel, it is safer to travel in Afghanistan now than it was 2 years ago, because the opposing force, which was the Taliban against the government, are now the government. So there's no one. There are still problems. Don't get me wrong. There are still, I mean, it gets very complex with the Sunni and Shia, and different factions of the Taliban. But it is safer now. The Taliban, they don't want problems. They want their country. They're basically trying to survive in this country. They want people to be safe. They don't want people on the streets doing opium. They want to try and, they want to be recognized to be ruling this country in a decent way. Their version of it is slightly different to ours. We're in the 21st century. They're still back in the 7th century where Prophet Muhammad was living.
How did you prepare for this? Like, if you, how did you just Google this, or did you go on the street? Did you fly? How many people did you have, and what happened? You touched down in Kabul.
Yeah, and we have our guide. We have like a guide, a fixer, who will come and meet us. So I already have his name. And the company I freelance for, they have a team out there who, and it's very well managed. These guys know what they're doing. And we travel in two little, oh God, I can never remember the name of vehicles. I'm such a female.
Four wheels, six wheels, is a truck, bus, car,
It's like a little mini four-wheel drive. I want it.
Jeep.
Little Toyota. No, not Jeeps, they're covered up. They're cool little things. They're cool little cars. Four-wheel drives, because we have to go across big mountain passes.
Okay.
So we have two of those, because there are six of us, and we have so driver in each, Afghan driver, and we have our fixer, who speaks good English. And we go to our hotel in Kabul.
What's a fixer? So that's like a local representative. Like, how do you
Yeah,
even
pretty much.
connect with a fixer? What is a fixer?
I mean, in their country, usually in the previous times, they might have worked with journalists, or some of them, they act as guides. I mean, guide is quite a loose term. I mean, you know, from our guiding days, you know, yeah. sometimes sometimes the guides are, you know, they've had 5 years training, they know all of the history, the dates and whatnot. Sometimes they just know the best place to go and get a nice banana and pistachio smoothie. Yes, that was one of the good things in Afghanistan.
I know what you mean. Yeah, like, yeah, where other countries you've got to be fully licensed and need 4 years training, and then there's people like us that just talk shit and do it with a smile and organize chaos on the fly.
No, is that true or not?
So he's not the bubbly personality pops that we are, you know, in, you know, people want to have fun. They're not there to produce a fantastic, relaxing holiday. They're there to logistically make it possible.
I mean, yeah, that is essential. It is. And from where I've traveled in the Middle East and Afghanistan, these people are, they're great. That they are. I love working with them. I love working with these guys. They have, they're not just that. I think some, you know, everyone's different, aren't they? But some of them, yeah, can just do the logistics.
They have much of a sense of humor.
Yeah, they do. More, like probably more so. And this is why I love the regions, because they do. I can really, you know, especially with our sarcasm in the West, they do.
So they get, they get sarcasm? Can they take the piss? They talk shit, or is it? They laugh at themselves.
Yes. And they laugh at the, and they also, they kind of mock their country too. They're like, look at the state of this place. Or, you know, they'll have a, you know, they do. They're kind of, they, I guess you have to be living in a place where it's so, it's been so harsh.
Yeah.
You kind of have to. And it's a, and I think that's what I'm attracted to when I visit these places and these people. They're very humble and they're very kind and giving, and they do take the piss. You know, it's, like, we have a laugh. We are enjoying ourselves on this trip.
Like, you and I are citizens of countries that were at war, you know, they were out there, our enemy 2 years ago. How do they just move past that? Like, oh, it was only 2 years ago, we've gotten on it, over it now.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, I can come away with my British passport and I've traveled to Afghanistan and it's been great and I've loved it, in the sense of what I, you know, it's not like going to bloody Ibiza or anything, and I've been, you know, having my time of my life, going to bars and whatnot. It's in a different context. But, you know, I can come away with my British passport. I come back to my life, my comfortable home, you know, my family, I've got my electricity, I've got all access to all of these things. But, you know, they're very humble, they have a great sense of humor, but they are living in, they are living under Taliban rule. They don't want to be, most people except the Taliban, they don't want to be living under Taliban rule. They want to be living how they were 2 years ago. But as they say, it is what it is. They have to accept. There's nothing they can do. The majority, they can't leave. You know, they can't, you know, with their passports, they can't get out. You know, a number of people, this is their life now. So they don't, you know, like, so for example, one of the rules of the Taliban is no music. So we'll be driving along in our little, whatever car it is, because I don't know what bloody car it is, our little four-wheel drive, it's kind of like a little mini bus. And we've got we've got a radio on playing our, like, Iranian music or Afghanistan music. And then we'll get to a checkpoint, we just turn the radio off because, you know, music's banned.
What's a checkpoint?
It's where the Taliban, so it's usually in between, like, outside of towns, outside of districts, when you're getting to certain areas of, even near a mosque or near government buildings. So the Taliban will stand here and guard it, and they'll come and check what we're doing, why we're traveling. They'll look in the back.
So I'm guessing these are a couple of troops holding some guns.
Yeah, AK-47s, and they've got their packs with all their stuff and their knives. Some of them,
is a safe country? How do you feel safe at one of these checkpoints?
Well, they are the ones keeping it safe. Because people opposed, you know, when the Taliban, 2 years ago, when the Taliban are, you know, they're making sure that they are in control. They have taken over. They've taken over all these cities. But to take over these cities, they've had to defeat other warlords or other people or other people in other districts who have opposed the Taliban. So all of these Taliban now spread around the country are making sure that no one else takes over their power again, essentially. So before, 2 years ago, the roads we've traveled on this trip, we weren't able to travel because the Taliban were against, like, different forces who were against the, it's very complex, who were against the Taliban. Now the Taliban are, like, ruling everything. They allow us to travel freely.
They got no there's no one competing for control. So they're just trying to maintain their own power.
Yeah,
so the control point is troops essentially just maintaining their own power. So you reach a checkpoint. There's a metal detectors. They frisk you. Do you got to bribe them? Do you wish them well? They're like, who are you? You're from Britain. G'day, mates. Like, what are they? How's
they're fascinated. They're fascinated by Americans because for a lot of them, you know, there's a couple of Americans traveling. For them, Americans, you know, that they would have heard this when they were young. You know, who are these Americans? You know, if you think for them, you know, they're Taliban from the mountains. You know, a lot of them now are outside Kabul in this city. Apparently, there was. You know, I mean, it is, you know, like, you know, we can like have a, like a laugh about it. But when they, like, some of the Taliban first came to Kabul and they'd never been to, they got like some, not to the right, like fun fairs. So there were photos of the Taliban at the fun fair. You know, they'd never experienced this. And you would see pictures in the news of like, what the hell? These guys have just taken over Kabul with their guns. And they're whizzing around eating candy floss at the local fun fair. So they're adapting to their lives in the cities, but they are from the mountains. So they see us ladies, and it's quite fascinating to witness. They're kind of indifferent to us as women. We've got our headscarves on. We have our long abayas on, you know, we are, you know, everybody's skin is covered.
Do you feel like that's done in a respectful way, or you feel second class?
Good question, Ben. I think it is done. I mean, Afghanistan has a history, not just under the Taliban, but of women being like subjugated, women being covered up in certain areas of Afghanistan. It's more so, except in the cities. They want women covered up because it's easier that we are like that. So, yeah, I think it is. We travel from the West, from other countries, out of respect to dress like this. Also, we would get in trouble if we didn't. You know, they would tell us. And people are worried. So from the previous time when the Taliban took over in the early 2000, was it? Women were beaten on the streets for not abiding by the rules, for not being with a man. And this was everybody's fear when the Taliban took over this time. But I think the Taliban takeover this time, it's as if they've had to go away and think about, right, we kind of can't do that anymore. But women, you know, there are women like still wearing... you know, I'd go through the, when we exited to fly out of Herat, and this woman, this Afghan woman, had this sparkly pink lipstick on and her headscarf was back here. And she's like, Taliban don't like this. You know, people are kind of trying to be defiant in their ways, but they don't like that. And we do have to sit a bit quietly in the back and, you know.
Can you imagine someone typically, I know you know the Gold Coast. Right. Can you imagine a Gold Coast girl turning up? With the lip fillers and the fake lashes going, oopsie poopsie, you know, like what, through the checkpoint we go. I'm a self-empowered woman. No one's going to tell me what to do. Fuck you. How would that go down?
I don't think it would. I think there would be disbelief, but I think they would tell her. I mean, they will. They don't want, and that's what I'm fascinated by, the mindset of the Taliban. Essentially, they see us, they're not even, you know, like, I always think, oh, are they kind of intrigued by us? But there's kind of an indifference. They want the women, they sort of look at us like we're kind of nothing. So at these checkpoints, they just check our passports, check the papers, ask where we're going, kind of look in the back, chat away. Some are more, you know, a bit fiercer than the others, but I never felt threatened in that way.
Your space respected?
Yeah.
Honored. You're second class, but a man can very feel empowered by, hey, you're a woman and you're mine, I'll protect you, in that sort of mindset, because you're not quite equal.
Oh, yeah, there definitely is that women are not equal. For example, on each trip it will change because the rules, no one really knows. It's all trying to slot into place. So we would visit, on our trip, we visit, it's called Bandi Amir Lakes, beautiful lake set up near Bamiyan, in the mountainous, Afghanistan is predominantly mountainous, but in the northern part of the country.
I'm glad you're telling some of this stuff, because I'm focused on all the shit reasons and the harsh reasons, which is part of traveling, which is part of the experience. But yeah, so there are some good reasons, like touristy places to visit.
Yeah. And I mean, but in this region, for example, we are due to visit these lakes today, take a little pedalo out. You know, families would used to visit, but in the last two months.
Sorry, what's a pedalo? What's that?
I thought this was like a thing that would, it's like a really crappy little boat that you sit in and you pedal. And it's shit. But like, we don't really, that's why.
Oh, sorry, this is British Australian terminology. I'm a little bit lost in translation. I know what you mean. A little pedal boat with your feet.
That's a pedal boat. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, gotcha. Sorry, my bad.
So they're like little days out on the lakes. Families would take their picnics and we as tourists would visit these beautiful lakes, but they've stopped women going. So we can't go as visitors. And families now can't go because women aren't allowed to go. They've just stopped everyone visiting the lakes. So things like that, you think, well, that's, you know, so that's kind of, it disrupts family life too. So you kind of think, and they've stopped that because the reason they stopped that is because women, you know, a few months ago were going there and their headscarves were coming down a bit. It was getting a bit too playful, essentially, I guess. So stop it.
Wow.
And that's, you know, so you wonder how many restrictions are going to start, you know, like holding them down more again, you know, to keep women down, to keep women out of the way. I would see women out in Kabul. Women can go out in groups with their friends. It's not like I didn't see any women, but a lot of them wanted to, but they're not free. They can't travel. You know, they've got to work from home. They can't travel to neighboring cities unless they're with a man. You know, this one woman said to me, she said, our doors are closing. You know, the doors are closing in on them.
Are people trying to escape? Are people trying to think, fuck this, let's go to Pakistan, let's become a refugee?
They can't. People in Pakistan, all the Afghans are getting ordered to come back. You know, like my guide, he said to me, he said, he lived in Turkey for a while, then he got deported back. And he knew what life was like in another country outside of Afghanistan. And he said, you know, God, I can't, like, we're living in the whole world's living in the 21st century except us. And like, even like trying to find a wife to get married, because like, I can't leave. I can't, it's hard to hear that people.
Do they have smartphones with Tinder? And can they swipe right?
I don't know. They don't even have TikTok. They've got Instagram though, so they can look at boobies.
Could you watch social media where you are? Was there restrictions?
Yeah, no, the internet's fine. They've got a lot of access to internet.
So surely they could figure out what's going on around the world just by social media.
Yeah, but you just can't reach out and touch it, I guess.
Yeah, but we're in that time where, like, I think Barack Obama said it, like, how it's sort of changing the world. You know, a little kid, I think when he was a big BlackBerry person, when the internet on their phone, like, it was becoming common, you know, in a remote third world place, you can self-educate yourself to a degree. You've learned, you know, I mean, Google knowledge, go on Wikipedia and acquire knowledge or figure out what it's like in the outside world or do a podcast like we're doing, you know, like how the information's changing so rapidly with education. But as you said, like, you can't leave home. You're stuck at home. Hang on, are they working hybrid roles? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, like, and you know, and they can't, and also even the women cannot, like, after, after maybe about sort of 12 or 14, you know, women, no education for women, but also there's no, even if men can still go and study, but for what? There is no, all the Taliban are getting the positions of power now. They can't leave. So they're probably like, fuck it, what's the point of studying? So
yeah.
Like, well, we can't study. And it's like, well, what should we do? Well, we can't even sit around and smoke shisha because that's been closed too.
Yeah.
Can't even go to the fucking lake now.
So what's on a day-to-day level? How do they pass time? What's the thing to do?
The thing to do, they drink tea, they sit with their families. I mean, it's all very community-based within the Islamic, you know, within the Islamic world anyway. You know, a lot of it, you know, people, big families. So they have, you know, have that at least, you know. We don't maybe have that so much in the West. Our families are very fragmented. They will, you know, big dinners, big food, families all living together. And they're just, but they're also, they have no idea what their future. You know, I know we don't in life essentially, but at least we have an idea of, you know, we might buy, save a house. You know, like my friend said to me out there, he said, you know, we all of us have to try and have a certain amount of money aside, not for the pension pot, but in case the country gets like invaded again, in case we have to leave again, in case we have to run, in case we have to, you know, nothing's, it's so unstable. It's,
how do you purchase, like, did you get some British pounds and go to the currency exchange and get cash? How did you go to the ATM? How does it work?
No, no ATMs out there, much the same in Iraq and Syria. Like the, you know, it's just cash then. So we would, we meet a currency dealer on the black market who will, you know, trade our money. You know, we take dollars, we take pounds, trade, you know, get an exchange rate then. And then, yeah, we, you know, our day to day is, you know, we spend a couple of nights in Kabul. We visit certain sites in Kabul. Then we head out. We had a couple of internal flights.
Internal flights. Who's operating those?
Am Air.
Can't say I've heard of them. So that's a an Afghan's got an airline.
Yeah. So, and I think like from, you know, and they fly into, well, they fly internationally. So they fly, when we left, we flew out of Kabul to Dubai. So, you know, your flight, the aircraft has to have certain standards to be able to fly into these. You know, to
it's
fly
not that
into
third world. Like if you got pilots in there, be able to operate an aircraft. Have runways, electricity, you got internet, you got.
It's very clean as well. I was surprised how clean the country was. It's really, it's, and it's a beautiful country. But yeah, but like the, for example, like the internal flights, I mean, God knows what the, you know, the safety, safety's like on those planes. I didn't really want to think about it when I was getting my free little fudge. I mean, but, you know, so yeah. And it,
how was the airline food?
Not bad. I got a free fudge. I was happy.
Actually, that is one of my key questions, the food. So, you know, Tesco's in the UK, Morrison's is highly preserved shit. Same in Australia. I would imagine it's fresh produce. Is it like import foods or are they growing their own? Can you buy some opium down aisle five?
Yeah, no, yeah.
Or is it all markets?
I did ask. yeah, they have the, you know, they have the best pomegranates. They are from the southern part of the country, Kandahar, and you know, pomegranate juice everywhere. And then we'd be having the best banana milkshakes I've ever had. You know, so it, you know, a lot of, you know, out in the desert regions and in the south, a lot of fresh produce. You know, you see, I think cauliflowers, they were huge, big. You know, and these are just on the street, and they're better than we'll get in our supermarkets. Also, you know, from our supermarkets, it's from bloody America anyway. But you know, there it's from there. And
are they there to rip you off? Do they spot you as a tourist and they're like, all right, we're going to jam this person? Or are they actually respectful? Like, hey, so good to see someone else from another country spend some money and help the economy. We're going to show this person love and respect.
Oh, they do all the time. I mean, if I because they have such big families and they always buy, you know, if they won't go and buy one banana, they'll buy 1 kilo. And us as our, you know, us, we're like, I just want one banana today. I'll ask for one, and they just look like, what the hell? Just have it. Have them all. You know, they won't. So we never get charged for a lot of things. You know, they're very generous.
Wow. Yeah.
And a lot of them want to tell their stories. A lot of people do want to, you know, and the guide would translate. We meet a lot of people who are, I think they do. They see people from the West and maybe it gives them a bit of hope that it might be a bit normalized that, oh, maybe our country is a bit safer now people are coming.
Yeah. But then also, like, yeah. Sorry. Yep.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Going back to the food in city, because I love food, cities like Kabul and Herat, you know, we would go and we'd go to pizza restaurant. Wouldn't be the best pizza, obviously, but, you know, we'd go to pizza restaurants. We could get burgers. We could get, I mean, we'd always get kebabs anyway. But, you know, you could, your noodles or things. So you could get, you know, it's such a mixture of, like Persian, you know, you've got the influence from Iran. You've also got influence from the stands as well, from the Soviets. So you've got quite a different range. Once we're out of the cities, though, I mean, it is rice pretty much every day. Rice and bread.
How come you're only there for 2 weeks?
I mean, the visa we get is for 30 days, but predominantly people, you know, 2 weeks is kind of enough to see what we need to see in the country.
It's a massive country. Like, like the map itself, it's massive. It's bigger than the UK.
Yeah.
It's big. So you fly into Kabul and then you on four-wheel drives and you go road tripping for destination, go paddleboarding, go to markets. What else do you do? How do you spend 2 weeks there?
We went to one of the road trips we had, where did we go from? I have to remember. We went from Mazar-e-Sharif. We drove from there to Bamiyan. And then once we stayed in Bamiyan, that's where, you know, we would see a lot of the, like the Buddha stupid. They all got destroyed by the Taliban. So they're like Buddha carvings that were engraved in the rocks. We will spend time at visiting schools as well. Once we left there, we headed down and it was a...
Sorry, can I just ask about the schools? Like, how are the schools and how did you visit? How do you, the fixer obviously sets it up, but do you get involved with the kids?
Yeah, we sit in the back of the classroom with them all. And they're at that age, boys, and they are, you know, they're practicing their English. So we're sat there at the back training them with that. So that's really interesting. It's really nice to be able to do something like this and to see a school, you know, operating. Because at the moment, teachers can still teach at the moment.
So they're teaching English as part of their curriculum?
Yes, this is from a young age, and then it will stop for girls around 12 or 14.
Imagine when those kids with a smartphone become adults, become decision makers. So it might take 20 years before the country might turn or change.
I know. I mean, it's no. I mean, the people in the villages or like Bamiyan, for example, where I'm talking about, life for a lot of people in the mountains or those who are maybe working in the shops doesn't really change that much under the Taliban. The people predominantly affected are those women in powerful positions or in the cities. Life changed a lot. But in the mountains that we would spend, you know, in the mountainous places or when we were traveling to in between cities through the mountains, you know, life is hard, but life remains essentially the same. They still have to work the land. They still have no power. They still have to, you know, put food on the table. It's, you know, nothing much changed for them. We visited Minaret of Jam. I don't know if you've heard of that. It's
I know very little about Afghanistan. So this is like the Sydney Opera House of Afghanistan. It's like the monuments. This is the Big Ben. Gotcha. What is it?
But it's the first time, you know, in a year that we've been able to visit, because it used to be under, you know, the roads weren't accessible, but it's a UNESCO heritage site. And it's just fascinating. It's just one minaret. It must have been part of a city many years ago. And it's just that people have always, a lot of historians or, you know, people, it's so inaccessible. It took us 3 days. We stayed in like hotels only 3 days on these shitty, bumpy roads. We already had a puncture. You know, we had to get food or water to travel. Then we camped out in tents there under the stars. It was really cool knowing that you're one of a few people, who have stayed there. So it does. The country has, you know, it does have, you know, you are traveling through Mount. It's the bleakness of the region, but also the beauty. So you are experiencing.
Did you take much footage or photos of this?
I do. I took about 400 photos.
You're not on social media as much. I've never seen many.
There's one of me on the swing with the Taliban. That was quite.
Well.
I haven't put that up on social media because I've still got to figure out how that will go down.
That is so fascinating. Yeah, you got to send them through. Like, people that's listening, bombard Carly's DMs and please upload more. Oh my God, I want to learn more and more. A couple more questions because time is wrapping up because I have not subscribed to the Zoom. Doing this for free, people. I'm still not paying for this podcast and still make money out of it. Oh dear. All right. Cricket. So Australia recently won the World Cup. Bada bing, beat the UK. They beat India. But Glenn Maxwell, for those who's cricket nuts, scored one of these epic 200 runs innings against Afghanistan. Is there cricket all throughout Afghanistan?
They love it. Wow. Yeah. You'll see people. You even see the Taliban playing it at the checkpoints.
Oh. Now I want to go. Because I can't speak the language, but I know the sport really well. So that could be, you know, a way of mingling in with community. Right.
There are enough people who speak English who will get you by. You should come visit with me, Ben. Come to one of these countries. I'm taking my own trip to Syria in April.
April what? I'm looking at my tour schedule. How? What about January?
I'm not doing anything in January.
When's your next Afghanistan trip?
Oh, God, that won't be till November next year.
That's a little bit far away. Isn't it?
I know. I'm going to Syria in April, but yeah.
Okay, so Going to give a shout out to one of Melissa's, Brianna. She popped in a fantastic question. It's a toughie. So on behalf of Brianna, I'm going to ask a very challenging question for you. So there has been a lot of socio-political changes in Afghanistan in the last few years. What sentiment from the local community did you notice? What stood out?
What in regards to the changes? People are, they were very afraid when the Taliban took over. They're less afraid. A lot of them are defiant. They're still going to try in their ways that they can to live their normal lives, i.e. with the music on, i.e. with a lipstick still wearing, but they're also very kind of stoic in the sense of it is what it is, that we have, that what they, a lot of them can't, like this woman said, who I met, I think I said it already, she just said, all of our doors are closing around us. So it is kind of, it's sort of, they do feel a little bit, they don't know where to turn, essentially, and nobody knows what is going to happen and how many restrictions are going to be taken away. So people aren't necessarily maybe living in fear now. It's more, God, we have to accept of this, but it's not a happy acceptance, essentially. Helps answer the question.
It does. It's a tough question. I got another, hopefully easier question, but another golden nugget. What was the most challenging day as a tour guide and why?
In Afghanistan?
Yeah.
I mean, I do quite like the challenges of it, but we had a long day. We were crossing a mountain pass. One of the tunnels was closed for, you know, they fix them at the year. So we had to go over this pass that is never usually accessible. So we're going over this crazy pass, bearing in mind there is no road recovery in Afghanistan. If your car goes off that road, off these huge mountain passes, there's no safety barriers, nothing. So we were traveling up. There was traffic jams along. I'll send you photos. There were traffic jams all heading up by the side. There are people pushing their cars. There are people having to walk. The temperature, I mean, it was getting down to minus temperatures. We're three and a half thousand meters up. And we're doing this at night.
Wow.
So that was, you know, that was our, you know, it was a 20 hour drive, I think, that day. I don't know how these drivers do it. So it was full on. I mean, it's challenging, but at some point you think, shit.
Maybe there's something from the opium fields.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I should have done. I'd be like, who cares about this? But yeah, if something goes wrong out there, you're like, shit, we are in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Yeah.
Not coming to help.
Yeah, so like. Is there good hospitals? Like, you're probably completely fucked, aren't you? You're on your own.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, even to get to the hospital, we're hours and hours and hours from even a decent hospital. So that suddenly, And then, so yeah, you do realize then you are quite in the middle of freaking nowhere in freaking Afghanistan.
Well, in the dark. Is there any final thoughts before we wrap up this podcast?
My final thoughts would be, I think people, you know, visit these countries just to get that perspective, to see it for themselves, not all what you see in the media and the news. And the people are lovely.
You got through it. Well, the way I sort of see it as well, like in modern history, look at Vietnam, Australia, United States. I don't think Britain was there. I don't think they were fighting Vietnam, if memory serves. But the point is, arch enemy, we were fighting them for many, many years. The North Vietnamese or the Viet Cong took over. We lost the war and the enemy took over. But somewhere along the lines, things changed. Somewhere along the lines, it got friendly. Somewhere along the lines, it got safe. Somewhere along the lines, you can travel no worries through Vietnam with a smile. And there's respect and happiness shown towards Australians and Americans. And these were the arch enemy. Don't know precisely when that timeline happened. But by what you're saying, we're only 2 years since Kabul's been taken over by the Taliban, right? So, you know, people on a street level are meeting yourselves and thinking, hang on, here's a tourist from the UK that was at war against us. Now they're traveling through. So it changes perception and maybe social media or maybe two listeners that listen to this podcast. I don't know. If we could reach it out to the Taliban, you're like, hey, have a bit of a, you know what I mean? Like things change that status quo. So one would be common practice. Like, you know, mass tourism happens throughout Egypt and Egypt can be quite a dangerous place, but there's mass tourism. So they get used to it. So yeah. Afghanistan can get to that level or when?
I mean, it's safe for us to travel there, but it's like the moral, it's the moral, you know, we're traveling a country that people, you know, Taliban's not being recognized by the countries because it is a terrorist organization. And it's that people, you know, like by me talk, you know, there are funny stories of being with the Taliban, but ultimately it's not a funny situation because of how people are living. But it's, I felt safe going there. I'm not, you know, saying it's a safe country to live in. I, you know, it's just my truth from that. But yeah, we never know how, we don't know for those living there and first visiting how it will be.
Okay, we've got about 20 seconds left before it's going to cut out. But in 10 seconds, the best you can... No, we've got a little bit longer. We've got about a minute to go before it pops out. But in 30 seconds or less, can you sell me why would you want to go to Afghanistan with Carly?
Oh, God. Well, A, you get to come with me. No, because we travel with a really good team. You'll get to experience a country that... is it, you know, you just get to experience that. It changes my perspective. I come all back from that country and I feel that things that matter so much here don't matter so much anymore, and it really puts things into place, into perspective. It's a beautiful country. Yeah, I just, it's an experience, and in this life aren't we going to try to grow from these things? I think it's good for that.
Good answer. Well, on that note, I'm going to hit stop recording. You made it to the end of the podcast. All right. You know the drill. Give us a like, subscribe, or leave some juicy comments. And thank you so much for listening to Get Lost with the Travel Guide, where we talk all things travel, tourism, and adventure. See you next time.